listener production.
Coming up today on Footy Talk, Tom Duday with the unfortunate ACL. We talk about that and the effect that it has on both player and team. The news of Melbourne overnight. We break that all down with Nathan Jones. The Peter Wright suspension from this week. And what is going on at the Western Bulldogs? That's all coming up on Footy Talk. It is Wednesday's edition of Footy Talk, and we do it a little bit differently. On a Wednesday, we look at the footy world from the player's point of view. We give you an insight to what it's like to be behind the headlines, the issues that the clubs and the players are faced with each and every week. And, well, we made a bit of news last week because Abbey Holmes whacked the AFL and said they should be doing their fixturing a little bit better. I'm Jack Heverin. Abs, good to see you.
Great to see you, as always.
Anyone at HQ talking to you after last week?
No, or? Radio silence. So I'm not sure if I'm on the outer now, but... No, as we said, it did go everywhere, but it's good that there was a number of people that agreed with us as well. So night games during F1 weekend, that's what we want to see.
Yeah, you don't think it's a problem now. Wait till you're trying to get finals tickets. Then it becomes a big problem for you. Nathan Jones, welcome back.
Thanks, mate. No, it's nice to be here.
Just wanted to ask you a little bit about, we always follow the life and times of Abby because she lives a cooler life than pretty much all of us.
So we discussed this last week.
We just watch on in awe. Did you notice that she went to Urban Surf yesterday?
I did.
Now, I know you're a surfer.
Although you can't really, the wave she surfed, you can't really claim as
Mate,
a wave.
I was body slamming the whitewash at Urban Surf. I did actually stand up my first time though, and then there were some doozies after that.
I was at home last night just flicking through social media, saw that you're in Urban Surf. My first thought was, Jonesy's going to have a field day.
Oh,
this
yeah.
One. Mate, so the floor is yours.
Dead set ankle biters. But anyway, well done for getting out there and having a crack, Abs.
She gave it a go.
From what I saw, it looked good. She got one on film.
Yeah.
You didn't get the rest of it.
Hey, I've got multiple videos I can show you. But no, it was good fun. Great teacher, James, down at Urban Surf. But no, next time I don't know if I'll be venturing out to the barrels, as they call it.
Yeah, no, I love that place. It's pretty fun. Pretty fun.
I feel like he's looking down on you
a
little bit.
Yeah, well. Shaking his head in disgust.
No, she'll be right.
Hey, plenty to get through today. As we go to record this morning, so in full disclosure, we're recording this morning about 10 o'clock our time. News has just come through in the last half an hour or so about Tom Duday shattering so close to a return for Brisbane, has been through so much already and starting at a new club. No full information yet as to terms of the severity of the knee injury, but it's looking pretty serious again. It's shocking news.
Shocking news. I'm absolutely heartbroken for Tommy. I caught up with him at the game round zero on the Friday night there, and I could see the excitement in his face that this is a guy who not only it's a new season, but this is a new state moving up to Queensland. This is a new club where you want to come in and really show your worth and really come in and make an impact. And he was so excited that he was only a few weeks away. And, you know, I got to know him and his beautiful partner, Emily, at the Crows, you know, a few years ago as well. And they are just two of world's best people. So, no, not only that, from a player and an athlete's perspective, but a great human. And waking up and hearing that news this morning, I was absolutely heartbroken.
Yeah, it's gut-wrenching, isn't it? It's I was the same. It's almost like he'll never do a bloody press conference at the start of his return week again. It's like almost he's half jinxed himself. But I guess you wait with bated breath to hear how bad it is. They're sort of saying at the moment partial. And then the question for mine is, like, what's the recovery on that? Like, is that another reconstruction? Does he sit out and wait for that to repair? It's it'll be excruciating for him, and considering it's the third time he's injured injured an ACL, it's devastating. But as you said, Abs, a quality human, and you'd expect him to fight back, and Brisbane showed a lot of faith in wanting to recruit him and have him a part of their team. I think he'll go through another process, and fingers crossed he's right.
He was 10 months back as well, so did it quite well in terms of the recovery process. And I heard Lachie Neal interviewed this morning on radio, and he said it happened in the last 60 seconds of the session.
Yeah. It's always the way, isn't it?
It's just heartbreaking. So fingers crossed the partial tear isn't... another 9-monther, 10-monther,
That'll be the thing also, like the raising of the questions of, you know, 10 months, is that too early? And I think everyone from an uneducated point of view will suggest that. But, you know, having seen guys, I've never had one myself, but seeing guys complete that rehab process, like the amount of boxes they would have ticked to have said he's right to play, like you'd never even know. And it's like from my perspective, it's just genuine bad luck. Like the amount of medical scanning, strength testing, speed running testing. Like, he would have ticked all those boxes to be at that point. That's what makes it even more excruciating.
Shocking news. And we're thinking of you, Tommy, as he recovers. As you say, Abby, he's just a good person, good human, and not that you wish that upon anyone, but it's shocking news for Tom. The other news of the last 24 hours is, well, the AFL made federal parliament yesterday, and a report from Michael Warner and the Herald Sun around the Melbourne Footy Club, and a report around illicit drug testing happening off-site at a separate location. Essentially, to break it down, is players were taken during the week to test whether they would be a risk of testing positive for something on game day. Jonesy, I know that this is a slightly awkward one for you. Yeah. We're talking about the club that you love here, but you are in the chair, and I guess we have to ask you some questions on it.
Yeah, for sure.
What did you think when you read it late last night?
Well, I was only made aware of it this morning, really. I was probably already asleep before I'd even taken notice of it. And I was up and at it this morning, and when I got in the car, I'd had a handful of messages like, what the hell is going on? So it's fresh in my mind. But look, I guess I can only talk from my experience, and I wasn't aware of that level of testing. Probably from where I sit and the experiences that I was aware of or understood of how that process took place was, target testing. So initially it was through the hair testing. And we're talking specifically about the illicit drugs policy, which, the players put their hand up to take part in that. And if you had come through in a positive way in that you would then be targeted. As far as this sort of backdoor, off the books testing, I've never been aware of that. This is the first I've understood that was even, occurring. So,
look, so you've never seen that before?
No, I've never heard of that. Unless, obviously, it was specifically targeted, which I think that was quite public knowledge, right? Like, if you had a strike, it was known that you were kind of going through this education process, but there would be an element of sort of target testing to ensure that you're on the right path. I guess this pivots in a little bit of a different direction because we're almost sort of trying to avoid any detection, if you like. And ensure players are clean if ultimately avoiding being caught on match day, which we saw of Joel Smith is the most recent example of that. So, yeah, look, it's I've always been pretty strong on my opinion. I just don't think this is specific to Melbourne. I think this is across the entire competition. Illicit drugs are not specifically a problem just to the AFL. This would be broad across sport, society, multiple age demographics. So I guess what we get is, a heightened focus because of, how important and revered AFL is amongst, the Australian Victorian communities.
Well, AFL, they have a duty of care across the board for their players. But is this protecting them not just of themselves but of players, opponents, teammates?
The interesting part for all of this will be the AFL's public position on it. I have always been an advocate for the illicit testing side of it, which obviously the players have volunteered in this. I think that's important to acknowledge. And the position I've always been, we've always been explained talking from a player's perspective has... It's set up for education and welfare and care. I guess what murkies those waters is the AFL somewhat controlling it from a brand perspective in terms of making sure that players aren't uncaught and tarnishing that. And I think that, again, their position on that will be very interesting to see because that makes it really complicates the situation from a wider and, Australian anti-doping testing point of view.
Well, this is all sort of happening as we're recording. So we are putting the pieces together on this, but this is via Sam Edmund a few moments ago before we started recording. He said he's spoken to the AFL and that they say this is their medical model. It is off the books for SIA because SIA aren't interested in illicit drugs out of competition. It is a volunteer policy that no other code or Olympian adheres to. They make no apologies from stopping players taking the field with a drug in their system that threatens their health and could return a long SIA ban. secrecy necessary under doctor-patient privilege, taking a handful of players target tested and not hundreds. But its clandestine nature, which is faking the injuries and player X is missing because of a hamstring when we know that there are other things at play, does attract criticism, as is the fact that it's a criminal act at the end of the day. And Sam goes on to say that it's certainly a complex space. The AFL's involvement here, Abs, is going to need more justification than that.
Definitely. And that's obviously from Sam's report there, that's probably where everybody might be quite concerned is, are they trying to cover this up, which is effectively illegal? You know, this is a criminal matter that they're effectively trying to cover up so that the players, once they're protected from themselves, they're not, you know, going out there and going to be put in the position where WADA will find them guilty of using a substance. But yeah, it's more that criminal side of it for me, which is going to prick the ears up, I believe.
Now, you two are both very well connected in footy. And this is what we do on the Wednesday show. We talk about it from a different lens. We're not going to name and we're not going to give any sort of air to any rumours, but let's call a spade here. We all hear rumours about certain things. Do you think that there is a lot more to come after this?
Oh, look, I think absolutely, yeah. I think the position, I've already justified my stance, and I think the position the AFL comes out probably explaining in a greater level of detail what you just read out is going to either implicate more clubs or clean the slate, for lack of a better term. But I can't see how that's possible when you just look at the issues that Melbourne's faced over the off-season. And as I said, I don't think from my knowledge and experience and just what you see and feel that this isn't specific to one club. I think this would be a broad issue. And how they handle it, I can understand the sensitivities, particularly when they are promoting a educational and welfare model. There is that patient doctor confidentiality involved in that. I think the confusion, or what the confusion comes in with the public, is just the lack of transparency on that, and then understanding the separation between SIA, WADA, and what their role is and what this volunteer illicit drugs policy is. And as you mentioned, I guess the clandestine nature of the way in which they're being reported and players are being pulled from games just murkies the whole thing and I feel like breaks the trust between the public and the AFL, and I think
and the fans,
and repairing that is absolute priority, and the only way to do that is to provide clarity and transparency on where what their position is and where we move to from here.
Spot on.
These players are role models, and it doesn't matter if you know you sign up to be an AFL player and you want that or you don't. You automatically have that when you are representing the AFL, when you're representing a football club. And it is an absolute privilege to play AFL footy because there are so many people out there who would give their left arm to play and they don't get that opportunity. You are a role model in the sense of the word. Jonesy, the captain of a footy club, wasn't aware that this was a thing. There's a select number of players that go through this, I guess, experience. But Why is it a thing? You know, if you're getting paid, what's the average wage in the AFL?
Nearly $400,000.
Yeah, $400,000. If you can't say no to illicit substance, then do you deserve to be playing AFL football?
Maybe not. And I think the other thing out of this that hopefully it promotes a broader conversation about the current policy and that the current structure of two strikes and keeping clubs out of the loop. If a player has a problem, and it very much may be in its infancy or it may be a longer deep-seated problem, but if a player is experiencing issues with drugs, they need immediate help from people who are professionals. It shouldn't take a second strike and all that sort of stuff before clubs get involved. They need help that day.
And that's where the help, absolutely, I agree with it. And, you know, unfortunately, with society the way it is today, there are drugs out there, right? But if you're given help and you're provided education and you continue to go backwards or stay the same or whatever and not grow and adapt and change, then that's where my issue with it comes in.
Yeah, but that's just that's a standard in society, right? Like you can only lead a horse to water. You can't make it drink. And we're going to have, of 880 odd players, there's going to be a handful of black sheep that aren't going to be willing to accept the help and education. And that would be snapshot of what you see with people in society. And ultimately, like, the AFL is no different. These players come from all different walks of life, all different experiences, all different family backgrounds. And, you know, the AFL can only do so much to help them. I think that's, you know, I do agree, Abs, with the role model in a sense, but at the same time, I feel like as a media, we put players on a pedestal, sports people on a pedestal, and ultimately they're no different to the average person that walks down the street, right? Yeah, they're talented at their sport, but they have all the same personal challenges and all the same issues that other people face. It's just the fact that they're in the spotlight with the sports that they play. So I think getting some balance and perspective on that is important, and hopefully as we unravel some of this, that we land in a much sort of more balanced position.
Couple of other things to punch through. We spent a lot of time on that one this morning. One is around the Western Bulldogs. We've spoken about them a lot already on this show on Wednesdays, and I think we're going to keep talking about them a lot. I think they are one of, if not the biggest watch this space this season, the Western Bulldogs, with what goes on. And I guess you can add to that when you have situations like Jack McRae and Caleb Daniel around selection and Caleb playing as a sub and all of those sorts of things. What's that like internally? From a player's point of view, they all talk. There's no doubt about it. There'd be all sorts of conversations going on. What do you think that'd be like at the moment?
It all depends ultimately on the communication piece internally and how that's explained. And it's hard for us to say, right, we all just look at their previous history. McRae dominates, big ball winner. Caleb Daniel being really crafty, kind of architect of their ball movement over the last few years, and both of them not playing.
Previous best and fairest.
Yeah, it's kind of like, why, how? And it's hard to pass judgment without understanding the nuances internally, but ultimately, you know, if you were to look at it sort of one of two ways, like either Bevo does a really great job in being able to communicate as to the reasons why they aren't making the team and their road back and how they're going to get back in the team, or he avoids it and it becomes a real elephant in the room type situation where most players are thinking, the hell is going on? Yeah. Like, how are they not playing? And that's why it makes it such an interesting watch, because we don't have the detail.
No.
Of the internal understanding of what's happening.
Communication piece,
But we'll understand by how I think the team performs will be a reflection of what's going on internally with their culture. And I think that's, for me, the biggest question mark. They're impressive on the weekend, but again, still I'm shocked at how McRae's not even in the 24 or 26, you know, in the emergency group after a performance like he had on the weekend.
Yeah.
Like, he couldn't play any better. But yeah, ultimately we don't really know until we know.
47 disposals, 17 clearances, if you don't mind.
Decent game.
I'm gonna touch on the individual. Everybody is different in the way that they, I guess, attack hardships throughout their career. You know, when you look at McRae, you look at Daniel, the way that they're going to respond is what I want to see. So you're going to either go one of two ways. You're going to look at it as a challenge and work your absolute ass off to make sure that you get back into the 22 and you do not leave that 22. Or, yeah, do you kind of look towards the end of the year and where am I going? My contract, you know, these conversations, speaking to my manager, I don't want to be here anymore.
Yeah.
So you look at the individual as well, on top of the communication that I'm sure Bevo's having with these players. Every coach needs to, and the game has changed drastically over the last, you know, 5 to 10 years in the way that you need to communicate with the individuals. But yeah, it's the way that these two in particular will respond, and I have no doubt they are so professional that they would be doing every little thing that they can. They're crossing every T, dotting every I to make sure that they get back into that team and they don't drop out.
Lastly is Peter Wright. We've got to mention that before we go as well. I could just see Jonesy's eyes just sort of
I'm not sure.
Go on.
I just don't know how I feel about it. But I understand it, if that makes sense. Like,
it's a tricky one.
Yeah, it's like head says, I understand why. Yes, if you're dialing it right back and you're watching it so nuanced second by second, he turns his body, he has a look with his eyes that it all happens so fast, and ultimately then the injury. But I felt like he kind of competed for the ball, and, you know, had he not turned his body in, he'd jumped and Cunningham had ran into his knee or his hip, and the same outcome for him, concussion and memory loss. Does Wright still get suspended for that? Like, I'm not sure. I just don't know. I think it's the right direction, but it's just going to take time for a lot of us to be able to swallow it. I was listening to Luke Hodge on the way in. He's like, we're really sort of coaching players to play differently from how you're brought up. And someone like Essendon, right, they're in a kind of a bit of a pickle because it's they're being challenged for their hardness and their competitiveness. So players are wanting to make a statement. But, yeah, like obviously with what's happened over the last, 6 months, probably going all the way back to the Maynard incident, like you now have an absolute duty of care to make every effort not to not even to brace and bump for contact. And in that case, like the ball was literally within arm's reach of both players.
But that changes the game.
Yeah, absolutely it does.
Absolutely it does. So on Hodgie's point, we as footballers have been coached to make a contest at all costs. Heart attack on the footy, right? If Peter Wright's, I understand he was braced, his shoulder side on, but if his arms were outstretched an inch, is this a different conversation?
That's
what I want to know.
Yeah.
Is where do you differentiate this instance?
And the other part to it is that if he doesn't go at all, guess what's been clipped
the
up?
The media.
Monday night on all the footy shows. And I mean, we are the media, I guess.
Yeah.
I can even talk about it from a producer point of view. I've produced footy shows before. If he doesn't go, that's top of the list Monday night for all of the shows.
That's where the players cannot win in that instance, because they're going to get weeks if they have a crack and make a contest, but then they're going to get absolutely slandered in the media if they don't crack in and put in the effort. So
I think the other interesting part of it is like the recklessness with which guys enter the contest, like running back with the flight, like it's a collision sport. Like if we're because we encourage guys to do that too, right? Like,
yeah.
Yeah, the courage.
Show bravery and courage and run back like as open as a book into contests. Well, like should we stop encouraging that also? Like because that is obviously bringing on the fact that guys are opening themselves up for injury.
Yeah, good point.
In probably the most vulnerable position on the field is literally where we saw Cunningham the other night. And again, if he doesn't go, that's highlighted.
Yeah.
He didn't have a crack. He didn't show bravery and courage. He should have ran back with the flight. I don't know. I think that's why it's so interesting. And it'll be interesting to see whether they stick with the hard stance over the season or do they pull back. But ultimately, when you're starting to adjudicate tribunal on the outcome, it's going to be really difficult to see how it never goes back to where it has been.
I feel like we're going to have a very long season of tribunal discussions, but the game is changing. There's no doubt about that. If you're listening to us on Spotify, hit the bell, of course, to be notified when we drop a new episode. And you can also send us a message on Instagram at footytalk_pod. Abs, always good to see you.
Great.
Enjoy
to
your
see
week.
You. Thank you very much.
Jonesy, well
Thanks,
done.
Guys.
It's been a very, very, very interesting set of topics to cover off today. Tomorrow, trust me, it gets a lot lighter tomorrow because Daisy Thomas and Heath Shaw are in, and who knows where that's headed next. This has been Footy Talk.